There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Before we get started with this episode of Benched with Bubba, I wanted to talk to you about Superdraft. Awesome new daily fantasy website. It's different. You don't have to worry about pricing, guys. Play who you want. Think about it this way. If you're playing DraftKings, the more expensive a guy is, the less points he can multiply. The cheaper he is, the more multiplier points he is, because this is an exclusive multiplier game mode, a brand new way to play DFS. Draft any player you want with no salary restrictions. Each player is given a value that multiplies their points, giving you the ability to maximize your score with the players you want. So there's tons and tons of funds. You can take the risk if you want. You don't have to. It's totally up to you. And it's a blast. Sign up with promo code Bubba to get you going. When you deposit $10 or more, you get a free $10. But regardless, you just sign up, use Bubba, play some free contests, get your feet wet, tinker in it. Tons and tons of overlay. Only like half of a tournament filled up today. They have tons of cool stuff there. And they also have a $125,000 NFL Week 1 action. So go check it all out over at Superdraft in your app store. Use promo code Bubba. Also, if you can rating and review on iTunes, we'd much, much appreciate it. It would help the podcast out a ton. But for now, welcome to Bench with Bubba episode 208. Some fantasy baseball with our buddy Batflip Crazy Bubba and the Batflip 7. Welcome back, everybody, to Bubba and the Batflip, episode 7. You can find me on Twitter at BDEntric and my co-host, as always, on this great fantasy baseball endeavor. You can find him on Twitter at BatflipCrazy. Toby, how are we doing tonight, man?
We are doing pretty well, Bubba. We are getting to that point in the season where every single day is like a roller coaster. It's like every single at-bat, every single pitching performance just means so much. So I'm a little tilted. I had Drew Verhagen, somebody we've talked about on the podcast before. I had him starting and he pitched really well. He was actually in line for the win. And then the Tigers bullpen blew it. And then Ian Kennedy blew a save and I need saves in one league. Thankfully he got the win. But anyways, that's kind of a summation of every single night for the rest of the season for me. How are you doing?
I'm doing. It's a wild ride this last month of the season as everyone shifts focus to fantasy football and lets us baseball diehards really enjoy the rest of the season. So that's always good. We can take solace in the fact that we will finish our league strong as most people forget about baseball. So that's always good.
Totally.
But we got a lot to talk about per usual. We got some news, some players, some September call-ups, all that good stuff. So let's get right at it. The Twins, they've been active like most teams making moves these days. Kyle Gibson to the IL, 10-day IL with ulcerative colitis. That is not good. Not good at all. Not comfortable, at least. What's your take on Gibson, who's been actually pretty good this year and is a blow to a team trying to hang on to the AL Central?
Yeah, it's a bummer that he has ulcerative colitis. I actually have some folks in my family who have had that, and that can be brutal. So definitely wishing him really well on that. I think Gibson has been kind of up and down this season. He's an interesting guy because the skills always look a lot nicer, I think, than the performance does. But he walks a lot of guys, gives up a lot of homers. And so when it all is said and done, he's a good example of, you know, a guy who just kind of is what he is. In terms of moving forward, I think it'll be interesting to see what the Twins do today. They had a Dobnak, I think, is it Robert Dobnak? I want to say. He didn't pitch. He pitched one inning. I think he pitched well. And then Lewis Thorpe followed up as kind of the primary pitcher. I was ready to kind of throw both of them kind of in the scrap heap. But then all of a sudden, Alex Chamberlain, our good friend, at Dolph Haldhagen on Twitter, pointed out that he was part of the peripheral prospects on August 9th and that he led the upper minors in ground ball rate and ranked sixth in whiff rate among 133 qualified arms. So maybe there is something to Dobnak potentially, although him only pitching one inning doesn't necessarily bode well for providing some wins, maybe a decent source of innings. It'll be interesting to see whether Devin Smeltzer comes back into the rotation once he's able to kind of line up with where they need him. He could be an interesting option for the Twins, just if you're in search of wins and potentially some whip help, because he doesn't really walk many guys. But outside of that, like, I think, you know, Dobnak seems like an interesting arm. I trust Alex a lot, and he seems to be intrigued, and so count me intrigued as well.
Yeah, if Alex is intrigued on someone, you should probably pay attention, i.e. Mike Tauchman and company. So he definitely has his boys, and he knows them for a reason. Smeltzer's the name that kind of stands out to me. These other guys, they are good, and if these guys are Dolph Haldhagen, Alex, and those guys are interested in him, then yes, there is some appeal to it for sure. But I think Smeltzer's a guy they might want to give some run. He pitched well in a limited action, not great, but well, like you said, limits the whip info for your fantasy team. And there's a lot to like there with what Smeltzer has to offer. The Ks haven't been great in the bigs, but in the minors, still close to like about 9 Ks per 9, about a K per inning in the minors, pitched well in AAA this year. So a guy to keep an eye on for sure. And I think as they called him up with September call-ups, he could be kind of valuable as the season goes on in September. But it'll be a mixed match of a lot of things probably when it comes to the Twins, as they'll use all their extra pitchers to save all the leads to get all the wins to win the division. So it could get real interesting in Minnesota. All right, let's talk about the New York Yankees. Edwin Encarnacion is back from the IL. He already went deep on a Tuesday, as we record on Tuesday night. The biggest question I have, we already know Edwin's good. If you can get Edwin, you play Edwin. We know that, Toby. But all these teams are going to be crowded with call-ups. The Yankees are really crowded. When you have Edwin Encarnacion, you have Luke Voit, who's back, you have Mike Ford, so on and so on and so on. Tons of options there, and they've all been pretty productive. If you hold some of these Yankees pieces, hey, Mike Tauchman and company, what are you doing with these guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Yankees have a lot of these kind of one-trick ponies, these power bats that you know, are pretty much first base or DH. So, like
the Giants would take some of those. We need some power bats
for sure. Well, I would not be surprised to see one of them with the Giants, the way you know them and the Yankees both just rotate through guys like nobody's business. You know, I actually think one thing to keep an eye out is Gary Sanchez's playing time. He has been occasionally starting as the DH. And so I think that will be limited, you know, with the Yankees pretty much having wrapped up the division at this point. It'll be interesting to see what his playing time is like down the stretch. Maybe he goes to every other day the last couple weeks, something like that. That could be a potential downside to that if you are a Sanchez owner like I am in some places. But I think probably the biggest hit is to Mike Ford. I think, you know, Voit and Encarnacion, I think, have a leg up over him. You know, he wouldn't have even been on the MLB roster if it weren't for some of the injuries that they had with Voit and Encarnacion going down. Obviously, they don't need to send Ford down now with the rosters expanded, but I think he's probably going to be hurt the most. But you could see a little bit of a rotation showing up here where, you know, Sanchez doesn't get as much run as DH, and then Encarnacion, Voit, and Ford kind of rotate in to keep bats fresh. It'll be something to monitor over the next week or so and see what it might look like down the stretch.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Ford's kind of the odd man out, and it's kind of crazy thinking He has hit like a walk-off game winner the other night, and he's been very productive for them. But Luke Voigt's Luke Voigt. Edwin's Edwin. Gary could lose some time for sure. He did hit two homers on Tuesday. He's actually been heating up of late, but he has
one tonight
time.
Too.
Oh, there you go. So he keeps crushing it as it goes there. So, yeah, it's the embarrassment of riches. And similar to the Twins, how they could rotate pitching, when it comes to the Yankees, they've all but locked up their division. They're 9 games up on the Rays. They're going into tonight. I don't know where they stand at this very moment as we record. But it's going to take quite the collapse for the Yankees not to win the AL East. So they can kind of rest guys and go from there. So will be interesting to see how that plays out for sure. But just buyer beware, if you own some Yankees, you might have some random days off that at-bats are important down the stretch here. So keep that in mind. Baltimore Orioles, this one, some may say blah to it. And if you say blah, I don't blame you. But if you're looking for some cheap power, Mark Trumbo is back from the IL, and he's been slotted right into the middle of that Orioles lineup. An Orioles lineup that's been sneaky good of late. They've played some bad pitching, but hey, that's September baseball in a nutshell. Even Alex Fast mentioned, like, in the last 30 days, they're right in the middle of the pack. They're 15th in baseball and WRC plus as a team. So they're not like the embarrassment that they used to be. They're being productive. He's in the middle of an order. Do you have any interest in a guy like Mark Trumbo?
Not really. You know, I think in today's doubleheader, I'm not sure he started either game. I think they have a better DH in Renato Nunez, who I have in a couple places. And so, you know, it doesn't make much sense, I don't think, to roll Trumbo out there. You know, he's not a part of their future necessarily. He's just kind of a guy who's there. And so I think giving some run to some younger guys in outfield positions, they probably don't want to push Trumbo too much physically either. So my biggest hope is that he does not push for playing time at DH with Nunez, because Nunez has been playing well. And the Orioles, along with every single AL East team, has a very nice schedule down the stretch. 4 games against the Rangers, 3 against the Dodgers. That should be tough. But then Detroit, Toronto, Seattle, Toronto, and wow, then Boston to finish off the season. And so I think the Orioles lineup could do a lot of damage down here, down the stretch. And so monitor the playing time. So much of September is just monitoring playing time and lineup position to see kind of which guys are getting some run here at the end. And if he does get some run, he's definitely could be a source of power and potentially RBI if he's batting in the right place in the lineup. So never turn your back on anyone, but you know, Trumbo, I'm not interested at this point yet.
Yeah, no, it's just a matter of if he gets in that playing time, because like you were saying, and I've been saying, is that they're playing really well. They have a great schedule the rest of the month. Nunez, Hanser Alberto, Anthony Santander, Mancini, Villar, like the list goes on and on. They're actually playing very well, and they're fantasy viable, especially in 15-team leagues right now. There's probably way more Orioles roster than people thought there would be at the beginning of the season, and they're actually being productive. So there's a lot. I think I had 2 or 3 in one TGFBI lineup, to be honest. I know I have Alberto and VR for sure. I think I have Mancini in that league. I can't remember now. So, yeah. It's wild. Wild times. I had Nunez, and I dropped him at one point in time. So,
Well,
Team Baltimore.
Yeah, kudos to you, too. I know a number of podcasts back, you were kind of touting Anthony Santander. And if folks had listened to you, myself included, they would have been really reaping the rewards there. He's been really solid, both batting average and power here over the last month or so.
That's one reason why I enjoy doing this podcast, besides just talking to a friend about baseball, is it's two different ways to look at the game. You do the deep stat dive, which is usually way more correct than my kind of feelers and hot streak. I like to write hot streaks and kind of how things go. You do the deep dive to show justification in it. So when we combine forces, it can be very beneficial depending on how it all plays out. So I use like kind of my DFS mindset. You do your deep dives and it all works out pretty, pretty good. Let's go to the Cleveland Indians. This one kind of sucks. Tyler Naquin is having an okay year. Not great, but kind of taking the next step in becoming an everyday ball player. Tears his ACL. Probably be out about 8 months. Rosters were going to expand, and Jake Bowers was coming up, but now it gives him everyday time. I know he's your boy. He went deep yesterday. He's going to be playing every day, and so far, so good. Are we getting back on the Jake Bowers train?
Well, Bubba, you could say that me and Jake Bowers have a history, for sure.
Just a slight one.
Yeah, for folks who didn't listen to me earlier on in the season, first of all, congratulations. Second of all, Jake Bowers was part of my bold predictions. I think I predicted 25 home runs and 10 stolen bases from him, which would have been something because this was before we knew that the ball was juiced. And he has certainly disappointed tremendously there. I think he was my most owned batter coming out of the draft season. The problem with Bowers is really the batted ball quality for me. He just hasn't shown consistently good batted ball quality. Even when he hit that home run in his first game back, like he hits that home run and I see it happen and I go immediately, I think I was on my phone or something like that. And I go on my phone immediately and I go to Baseball Savant and I'm like, okay, give me the exit velo on this. Is this guy back? And I look at it and it's the most putrid home run you've ever seen in your life. I think it was like 95.3 miles per hour. It had an expected batting average of 190. I was like, oh, so the dude just got lucky pretty much. And, you know, I don't want to trash Bowers because I obviously saw something in him heading into this season, but he's really regressed across the board. The strikeout rate, which I thought would go down because he's shown some decent contact skills, has stayed elevated. He's not hitting for power, not nearly the power that I think you can get from some other guys who are even on the wire at this point in time. And the speed just isn't there either. And, you know, last year he didn't have a great stolen base success rate. I kind of ignored that conveniently. And he's struggled again this year. And so I just don't see the speed. I don't see the power. I don't see the batted ball quality. I see a lot of Ks. I just don't see a lot of good things for Bowers moving forward. And he's probably going to be the strong flat of a platoon. And that can be beneficial in your in very deep leagues just by, you know, getting some at bats. But, you know, he's not, you know, if he plays like 3 out of 4 games, 2 out of 3 games, you know, are you really going to start him in some weekly or biweekly lineups? So I'm not that interested in Bowers, even though he's back. I did put in a couple late conditional bids on him, but I'm not super interested. What about you?
No, I'm not that interested either because they already had a crowded outfield situation. Like you said, he's going to be in a platoon most likely. Naquin helps a little bit there, but they have a lot of options, especially with the rosters expanding. I was not as high on Bowers as you were. I was intrigued. Like if he would have started off well, I probably would have bought in. But it pretty much a draft season, you had to buy in during the draft, and I was not there, especially where he was going in draft. So I know that was your boy, and hearing your discussion on him kind of helps me make up my mind on that that situation to ignore that since I don't have a lot of fab to begin with. So I'm not going to waste it on Jake Bowers.
Yeah, Bubba, this offseason, I am going to wake up like with cold sweats, just thinking about how in late March, Jake Bowers and Max Kepler were going about the same place in drafts. And I got a bunch of Max Kepler. I also had a bold prediction on him, but yep. If I would have just not been interested in Bowers, I would have had Max Kepler everywhere and I would have been loving life. But instead, I went a different direction.
Well, it's okay. You're not going to have to wait too late in the offseason because we're going to do a lot of that kind of stuff when we're in the early offseason. Just to kind of recap, totally. You know, where guys went, you know, values, guys that busted, guys we liked, so on and so forth. Just kind of recapping things to look ahead to next season. And just a precursor to everybody, Toby and I are in the same too early box that started today. So there's only like maybe 20-something picks. I haven't looked at it in a couple hours that have gone on. So starting next week, we'll start kind of digging in and recapping that as we get more than just, you know, a handful of plays. That'll take us up some good time to break things down as there won't be as many roster moves and injuries and stuff to really worry about as the month goes on. Keston Hira, speaking of injuries that really suck. Keston Hira was a guy that everyone was big on, spent a lot of fab money on. If you had him, he helped you out for a good amount of time. But now Keston Hira is on the IL with a hamstring injury. It's a grade two, which is that kind of middle ground of it's not great, but it could linger for a while. It's really tough to tell. So Travis Shaw, Ben Gamble came up on the extensions. What's your take on Hira? And then do you have any interest in a guy like Travis Shaw to fill in for him?
Yeah, you know, this one, like you mentioned, is a little bit of a shot to the gut. I own Hira in a couple places. One is a keeper league, which I'm really excited about having him there. But then the other one is in our barf league that we share with a bunch of folks in the fantasy baseball industry who live in the Bay Area. And that one's just kind of brutal. My team is fading fast there. So that's a little sad for me. He's been playing slightly over his head. You know, his contact skills haven't been great. He's got a high K percentage at 30. Around 30%. He's outpacing his expected WOBA by 40 points, but I think it's still in the 365 range, which is very solid. The Statcast metrics are nice, an 8.5% barrels per plate appearance. He's playing in Miller Park in that lineup. He has 16 home runs and 9 stolen bases in less than 300 plate appearances. So I think there's a lot to like moving forward for Hira. I'm super interested to see where he goes in two early mocks and in drafts next year. There's huge upside, but then there's also, you know, some red flags with the high K rate and the poor contact skills. And so, you know, he's a guy that I'll like a lot though, just because of that speed and power combination. Hopefully he comes back and gives a little bit more to fantasy owners. But I think if you had come into the season and said Keston Hira will get you 16 home runs and 9 stolen bases this season, I think a lot of folks would have taken it. So it's hard to complain too much there. In terms of Shaw, you know, God, what has happened to this guy, right? He's hitting 162 yeah. in 237 plate appearances. I know, right? I'm like, how do we go from where we were the last couple years with Shaw, where he was kind of like a little bit of an underrated bat, to where we are now is just quite remarkable. It is important to note, over his last 30 games, the contact rate is back up close to where it has been in the past. He continues to hit the ball in the air, and you know, he's hitting around league average in terms of his hard hit rate. I think he has like a 308 WOBA since the start of August. So it's certainly possible. Like, he's been good before. I think it's important to monitor him. He is going to get some opportunities, I think, with the injuries that are that have befallen the Brewers. Hira's obviously out. Mike Moustakas is struggling with a wrist injury. He played yesterday. He's out today. And then Lorenzo Cain has also been out. And so there are plenty of opportunities, especially in the infield right now, for the Brewers. And so Shaw could be a valuable guy moving forward. Let's take a look at what's their upcoming schedule. They got Chicago for 4. They got at Miami for 4, at St. Louis for 3, San Diego for 4, Pittsburgh for 3. So a mediocre schedule, I would say, moving forward. He's decent. Gamble, I'm not really interested in him. I think with the emergence of Trent Grisham, who's a better player, I think, just all around than Gamble, I don't think he's going to get many opportunities. There's already a battle for playing time with Ryan Braun, Christian Yelich, Kane when he is when he's healthy, and then Grisham. And so I just don't see him getting much run. He may get a couple steals here if he gets a little bit of playing time, but I don't see that on the horizon. What about you?
Yeah, it'll be interesting with Travis Shaw. You know, in 42 games in the minors, 12 homers, hitting .286, still only a .299 BABIP, so he's not getting like super lucky or anything. You know, a .426 WOBA in the minors, and people like to point out that the minors had the bouncy ball, but so does the majors. So I don't really care about that. They do have lively ballparks. There's no hiding that. But, you know, he lowered his K rate from 32.5% in the bigs to 21.3% in the minors. That's a big adjustment for me. That's more in line with his career averages year in and year out. So he's made some good adjustments in AAA, which you would hope in quote unquote lesser competition. So I think if he gets a good run here, you never know. He could run into a hot streak. Just a matter of how much runs he's going to get. Cause like you said, it's crowded. Thames is playing well. If Moustakas gets healthy, like there's room for him to move around the infield. Just everyday playing time is going to be tough. But Shaw, he could be interesting if he gets it going, because his improvements, he upped his walk rate, lowered his K rate. Everything was a lot better in AAA. And that's kind of the things you want to see when you send him down there to kind of get his mind right. Looked like things went in the right direction, because they did call him up. The injury helped, but they called him up before September 1st. So that's something to maybe consider. They called him and Gamble up a couple days beforehand. So I don't know. He's interesting. I'm not saying rush to go get him, but he could be a guy that could fill in some roster spots if you're desperate. Definitely. All right, New York Yankees. I think we've talked about this a few times now. CC Sabathia back on the injured list. It's not so much of do we want to own Sabathia. It seems like every time he goes on the IL, it's someone else that comes back that's kind of relevant. This time it's Jonathan Loaisiga, Johnny Lasagna. He's coming back from AAA. He's been a roller coaster guy. He's been good and bad. He's been bad this year in AAA. We've seen signs of life from him in the bigs. It's been very, very up and down. He's actually been better in AAA than the bigs, I should say. But he's going to get some starts here with the Yankees down the stretch. Again, you mentioned some nice schedules for the AL East down the stretch, which should help him in some good matchups. Is a guy like Loaisiga, because there's a bunch of guys we can talk about, like Ponce de Leon and many others that are coming up. Is Loaisiga one of the guys that maybe looks of interest to you? Because, again, good matchups, good offense behind you, wins can be there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not that interested in Loic Sega. He did pitch today. He pitched two innings. I think he gave up one run. You know, he's certainly tantalizing, like you mentioned. I think it was last year when he just kind of came on the scene. He never throws a ton of innings. The control is a little out of whack. But, you know, he hasn't gone more than four innings so far this year with the Yankees. You obviously have Luis Severino on the mend, potentially coming back after one more minor league start. I think he's starting on Friday of this week, something like that. So I don't think he has much value in most leagues. Obviously, monitor as you normally, as you should, like this time of year, you just need to monitor everything. The Yanks also have an off day on Thursday, and so they may just be able to skip a spot in the rotation and not really miss a beat. So at this point in time, I think he's probably like middle relief, long relief, or just kind of an innings eater guy. But obviously, he can rack up some Ks pretty quickly with that an awesome fastball, if I remember correctly. So, you know, he's there. I don't think you should go out and get him in 15-team leagues yet. Definitely monitor and see what happens. And then if something changes in the news, then you know, go out and pick him up. But I don't see a reason to at this point.
Yeah. Francisco Mejia, San Diego Padres, goes on the IL. This kind of sucks because he was starting to get everyday playing time. He was actually starting to be productive at the dish, kind of like we knew. He had a good offensive pedigree, but the defense has always been kind of a holdup there. It's an oblique strain. We know how those go. It could zap your power. It could take forever to heal. Padres aren't going anywhere this year. He could just join Fernando Tatis on the injured list for the rest of the season, for all we know. It sucks, but Austin Hedges is a catch in. Austin Allen gets the call up. Both kind of meh to me, but any interest in anybody on the Padres backstop?
No, not really. You know, I think, you know, Mejia, it's a blow to the guy, to folks who picked him up. Although, you know, if you picked him up a little while ago, you got that hot run we talked about last week, I think, or the week before that. I'm interested to see. He's one of those guys. I mean, there's so many guys this upcoming, you know, I'm excited for the two early mocks just to see where guys are going, because I just think there's so many question marks or so many young guys who are kind of up and coming. And it's like, how much do you buy into that, into what they've been able to produce? So I think he's one of those guys that's going to be really interesting. As we mentioned on the last show, I think, you know, I'm kind of just ignoring the Padres backstops at this point. But, you know, Mejia, he started hitting the ball in the air, which made a big difference for him. And so I think he's got those solid contact skills. I think this year he was going like at an ADP around 250. He was even like, he was like the 17th or 18th catcher going off the board, if not higher than that. And so it'll be interesting to see where that helium takes him entering drafts next year.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. It's nothing really to see anymore. But I think Mejia could be in for another boost in offensive production because he finally got it going. I think regular playing time is going to really help that kid out. But we'll have to wait till next year to find out. Let's go to the Dodgers. Max Muncy took a pitch off the wrist, fractured his wrist on the IL. They're saying it shouldn't take too long. I'm not a doctor, but I figured a fractured wrist might take a little bit of time. They expect him back by the end of the month, surprisingly. But he's out for now. They called up Christopher Negron. Obviously, we'll talk about Gavin Lux in a bit. But if you're a Muncy owner, what are you doing?
I mean, I think at this point of the season, you know, I think you're moving forward without him. Even 10 days at this point, like let's say he misses, you know, yeah, I just think you can move on from him. I don't think Muncy's going to be there. What I do think is interesting is that, you know, a lot of folks, myself included, doubted that Muncy might be able to recreate what he did last year. And he's done it quietly because power is up across the board, but 33 home runs this year, a few more plate appearances, 35 last year, slight reduction in Ks, continued elite plate discipline. So Muncy is an interesting guy. And then obviously his exit opens the door for Gavin Lux, who we're going to talk about a little bit later. But I have a question for you, Bubba. This isn't on our agenda, so this is just going to be out of left field. But you're drafting next year. Who do you like more, Chris Bryant or Max Muncy?
Well, for one, I was one of the detractors on Max Muncy this season already. So
yeah.
I'll take the L. It was more where he was going in drafts compared to his value. Like if you wanted him, you had to pay for Max Muncy. And yeah. I wasn't into paying for Max Muncy business, but it's weird because Bryant, like we've seen flashes. This, like he's actually, again, kind of like you said with Muncy, he's having a quiet, good season. He's not quite having his MVP season we hoped we'd see from 2 years ago, but he's having a quiet, good season. I think I'll go to Bryant again, back to the main reason that Muncy worries me And David Roberts proved me wrong this year. But as long as David Roberts is there and so many awesome weapons they have in LA, there's just, to me, there's always going to be some, I'm not saying playing time concerns is the right word, but there's going to be this, like, it's always in the back of the head that, oh, let's just give him an extra day off. And all of a sudden, by the end of the season, there's like 30 games he didn't play because there's so many players there. That adds up in the grand scheme of things. And that's kind of, that's what deterred me from him to begin with. And now, like, you look at Gavin Lux is there, Seager, Turner, Bellinger, like, there's your infield. Then you have the outfields full. Like, Muncy's got to rotate in there somewhere.
Yeah. I don't know. That'll actually be interesting. I wonder if they'll look to maybe move Muncy next year. Yeah,
they got to move someone. Like, they've been trying to move Jock. They can't move Jock. I think people have seen he's a big home run hitter, but a broken average. It's just they're going to have to move someone. That's why, as good as Gavin Lux is, and I agree it's probably for the better they didn't move him, I thought if they wanted a big-time guy, it wouldn't have hurt. They have, like, just embarrassment of riches.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the only reason why I ask is because Max Muncy is rated higher than Bryant on the player rater. ESPN player rater, and pretty much all fantasy sites as I've seen, they have Muncy rated higher than Bryant so far this year. And if you look at Bryant's last 2 years, you're looking at over 1,000 plate appearances and 39 home runs, and Muncy hit 35 last year in less than 500. So it's just
Bryant was hurt last year, though. Like, I'll get Bryant a grain of salt on that. He was hurt last year with his shoulder.
Okay.
Yeah, that zaps power in a big way.
For sure. Yeah, I just think it's interesting because I'm interested to see how people kind of react there. I mean, it's just one of these kind of things where, like, 2 years ago, if you'd been like, oh, who would you rather have, Max Muncy or Chris Bryant? And I'd kind of be like, maybe Max Muncy. But I agree, the playing time issues are definitely something to consider. It's interesting, though. Anyways, moving on. That wasn't on our agenda. I was just I just thought I'd check.
No, it's fine. I'm always for the spitball fun stuff. And I think he will be popular, but I think Bryant's name value might keep him higher in drafts. But we'll wait and see, because last year everybody wanted that bounce back Bryant season, and so they were aggressive on him. But maybe another year and more talent around will make it interesting. Talking about more talent around, Adalberto Mondesi is back from the IL. So much for, I think last week we talked about he was ready, but they wanted to wait till September 1st. They didn't want him to run a lot. Well, he came back on September 1st, and he stole 3 bases. That was pretty good. He had another stolen base tonight, so he's got 4 steals in the first 2 games he's playing in. He's like 4 for 9, 4 stolen bases, like 3 runs scored, picking up pretty much where he left off. Toby, what's your thoughts on Mondesi? Like, I guess you could skew it 2 ways. Obviously, if you have him, you're playing him. But what's it going to take to, as low as stolen bases are this year and how coveted they already are, being talked about for next draft season, where would you expect a guy like Mondesi to go? Because he was tearing the cover off the ball, then he got hurt, and now as people kind of forgot about him, now he's back.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny because we've all been waiting for him to come back. He comes back on a Sunday when nobody who does weekly or biweekly lineup changes has him in the lineup, and he steals those 3 bases. And everybody's like, 3 bases right now, that's like 10% of my total for the year. Not really, but it's just like unbelievable. I mean, it is interesting. I mean, I think it was nice to see that just because it feels like he's going to steal bases. He stole another base tonight. He stole 3rd base tonight when he got on. Like, I think he walked. Is that right? Yeah, he walked. Like, imagine.
Yeah, he walked and good.
Adalberto Mondesi. Imagine doing that.
That's like walking. It's almost like walking Billy Hamilton. It's just suicide.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he's going to be hurt at all by what he's done this year. I mean, if you look at his, he went, I think, at pick in our 2 early mock, he's already gone. He went to our good friend Alex Chamberlain at pick 24 today, and Smata said at pick 19 that he was considering him as well. And so I think the stolen bases are enough to have him way up there. And if he can stay healthy, I mean, one of the things that I question is, you know, well, I guess I don't know if I should do that, but, you know, he's just had a hard time staying healthy. I think even last year he had an IL stint as well, or maybe it was even during the minor league season, but he hasn't really been able to put together that full season yet. As we've heard, like, you know, these things aren't necessarily predictive of injuries unless they're soft tissue things. I don't think there's been anything consistent with him, but, you know, I think those stolen bases are enough to get him where he's going to be, right back up there where he was, if not higher, because, you know, stolen bases are going to get moved up so high because a guy like that can get you 50% of the stolen bases you need to be solidly in that stolen base category. And that's definitely something. 34 stolen bases and 365 plate appearances. I mean, he's pretty close to being on pace for what he was last year. So yeah. I think he's going to be fine.
Yeah, no, I think he'll be just fine. I was just curious where he'll go. And if he's already gone early in ours, that's pretty, pretty telling on the stolen base landscape out there. It's a big telltale. Let's go to some September call-ups. We'll start with the obvious big one that we've been waiting for a long time, Gavin Lux. We've hinted at him a few times. He was tearing the cover off the ball. He spent time in Double-A and Triple-A this year, combined for 26 home runs, hit 13 in each. He hit 392 in Triple-A, combined at 347 on the year. He's doing everything you want. 10 stolen bases, 99 runs scored in 113 games. He is just a beast at the plate. He should have been up a long time ago, but again, they had no reason to. But now he's up. He was leading off on Tuesday night. He already has at least one hit. He had two hits in his debut on Monday. The kid's good. He should be playing every day with the Dodgers, especially with Muncy out. He was pretty much grabbed, or he'll be grabbed this weekend because he wasn't eligible yet.
Yeah, he wasn't eligible.
This will be interesting because, like, no one has Fab left. But what's your thoughts on Gavin Lux? Because for me, it's pretty much go grab him. The guy's a monster. He's going to have a pretty fun September.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to be really good. We've seen, like, the guys who came in with high prospect pedigree who were tearing the cover off the ball in AAA have generally transitioned fairly well into the big leagues this year, I think. I think he's a must-add in all formats, even 12-team leagues, even below that. Dave Roberts has already said he's going to be on that strong side of the platoon at second base, so that's good for him. That's a good situation to be in. It's also helpful just to know that that's kind of where he's going to be so that you can, in weekly lineups or in biweekly lineups, you can kind of see what you're going to get for that week or that half week. So really like that. I would expect power and batting average from him. I know he has some speed in the minors. He has a 55 speed current and future scout grade on Fangraphs. So he's obviously a pretty fast guy. But I wouldn't expect much speed. 10 stolen bases between Double-A and Triple-A this year, but he's only 10 for 16. So not a great ratio in the minors, which doesn't bode well, I think, for him transitioning that speed into the big leagues. Like you mentioned, batting leadoff today, batting eighth yesterday. I think he should be really good. And I mean, September pitching is not going to be that much different than Triple-A pitching, if we're honest. So, go get him. I'm a little bummed because I have a decent amount of Fab in one of my leagues that's super competitive. I was in first. I'm now in second. But I've got Nelly Cruz in my util spot. And then I've got Bo Bichette at shortstop and Marcus Semien at shortstop. Bo Bichette at middle infield. And so I don't really have him to put anywhere there when I feel like I might be able to make a run at him this week. So. But yeah, I think add him everywhere.
But at the same time, Toby, you should add him so someone else can't have him.
Yeah, but do you spend that much of your Fab to do that? I just don't know. Like I've got
how much of a game changer do you think he is?
Let's do a little analysis. So it's one of my main events, and I'm in second currently by 4 points, but it's very close. It's like if I get a win, I move up another point. And then if I hit two home runs, then I'm already back in the lead. So let's see. So the way that I would look at it is I think I have $30 left, which is more than my top competition. I've got $19 more than they do. So I'll take a look at their lineup and see whether they would be of interest, if Lux would be of interest to them. And potentially, you know, I could bid like $12 just to make sure that they don't get him, or even $11 since I'm in second to them. But, you know, and then maybe down the stretch, he's going to play, you know, a little bit more than some of the other guys, a little bit of insurance. But is it that, or do I want to try to dominate the pitching matchups? you know, to improve in Ks, to improve in wins. Because I think that's one thing that's really underestimated is if you have a major fab advantage in the last few weeks, like pitching is so fickle right now. Like you add a two-start guy, and unless they're a guy who's just like doing it like throughout the season, you just don't know if they're going to make that second start. You just never know what's going to happen. And so, you know, I've had situations where I'm in a pretty good position in fab, and like last week in TGFBI, I think I had 12 starts. You know, so I had, I think, seven starting pitchers going, five of them had two start weeks, and then two of them had one start weeks. And I was able to make a decent amount of ground in some categories as a result of that. And so I think that's what you have to kind of weigh is, okay, like a month of Gavin Lux versus, you know, being able to really feel like you can get whoever you want to get down the stretch.
Okay, so let me play devil's advocate for a second then. I understand the streaming aspect and all that, but that only works if you want categories. If you want to mess with your ratios, it's probably not the best approach, correct?
Yes, absolutely. But in this league, I'm actually in pretty good
shape. I'm just trying to say for people listening that absolutely. We got to clarify that if you're worried about your ratios, you might not want to stream some of these guys like Daniel Norris's or Homer Bailey's or random guys like that along the way.
Totally. Yeah. It's all dependent. So like to give you an example here, I have a 3.62 ERA, which is first. I'm 0.04 ahead of the guy behind me. And then I'm 0.26 ahead of the person behind that's next in line. And so it's a relatively comfortable margin. It can close very quickly, right, with the wrong guys. But like having like a Garrett Cole and a Lucas Giolito gives me a little bit of comfort in there. And then with WHIP, I've got a 1.58, which is, or a 1.158, which is good for second. And then that is nearly 0.4 ahead, or more than 0.4, almost 0.5 ahead of the person that's one below me. And so that is a good place to be in because, and that's a really good point you make. Like you've always got to be balancing those categories and where can you make up the most and where you can lose them. Because I think a lot of times, myself included, we get like kind of fixated on a single category. Like I'm low in stolen bases here. I've been trying so damn hard to get my stolen bases up. And I feel like I've actually hurt myself because I've been starting stolen base guys. And now I'm in this huge competition for home runs where I had a little bit of a cushion earlier today. So I think that's what I love about Roto is the give and take of kind of chasing those categories and not losing ground in too much and stuff like that. And so I think at this point, you know, I've kind of given up on any chance of the overall for sure. And so just trying to really, you know, hammer home those categories where I can gain without giving up in areas where I can't, you know, where I can't give too much. So that's, you know, that's a lot about a one single team, but hopefully that's helpful to people as they think about like what they're considering as they go down the stretch with Fab.
Yeah. I just think Gavin Lux has the ability for average, some pop, some runs scored and RBIs. He can help in a lot of categories that might help some people around you. And if it's not even the guys around you, it can still move the rankings around that make it quite interesting. So absolutely. That was just my whole thought process there. Let's go to Kyle Tucker of the Houston Astros, another guy we've been hoping to see all year. Just dominated AAA. He only hit .266, but 34 home runs. He stole 30 bases, 30-30 guy in AAA. Not many have ever done that. I think I heard like the fourth or fifth guy to ever do that in AAA, something crazy like that. Average isn't great, but everything else is phenomenal when it comes to Kyle Tucker. Similar to some other situations we talked about, playing time should be a massive problem there, kind of the reason why they haven't called him up. You still have Yordan Alvarez catching or playing DH. You have Brantley Springer. I might have a concussion after tonight.
Yeah, I saw that.
And then there's like Reddick and Grisnick and everybody else in the outfield. So Kyle Tucker, as exciting as he is, and he's already owned in everywhere I existed because people drafted him, so they already picked him up. But what are your thoughts on Kyle Tucker? Like, would you rather have Gavin Lux or Kyle Tucker?
Oh, I'd easily rather have Lux just because I think the playing time is straightforward there. I do think I just saw that Springer injury that he might be out for a little bit. So that could open up some playing time. I mean, you just never know with the Astros though, right? Because it's like, do they just throw Mariznick in center then? Because can Tucker play center? I feel like he's more of a corner outfielder guy. I mean, it's, you know, they have like Josh Reddick there who's been not great, you know. So it's just everybody, I've heard plenty of people joke about it. It's like everybody loves Kyle Tucker except for the Houston Astros. And so I think that, you know, even since he got called up, like he didn't start today. He's 0 for 3. He's come on as a pinch hitter twice. And so unless he gets that consistent run, and the thing is, like, especially now, it's like you don't really have the opportunity to kind of wait and see if guys are going to get run. You know, it's like every like a week now, like starting with next week's Fab, like a week is a third of the season that's left. And so can you really wait a week to see if he's going to get some run? You know, and so I think that that's really challenging. So if you have him, obviously, like, monitor the situation. If he gets a run of playing time, I mean, I think he could be a championship winner for sure. I just think it might be a little bit more frustration, you know, when it comes to Tucker, similar to the next guy that I think we're going to talk about. I just, you know, it's like everybody loves them except for the team that they're playing for. See some sort of weakness, you know, that we're all missing.
Yeah, no, it sucks with Kyle Tucker. I'd love to see him play every day. I figured, like, 2 years ago, I was screaming from the rooftops, don't trade him for Archer or anybody. This last trade deadline, I was saying trade him so he could play somewhere. we'll see what happens this offseason. I don't know. It's pretty crazy what's going on in that situation. But you mentioned the next guy, Nate Lowe, my boy, our boy, everyone's boy, except the Tampa Rays boy, Nate Lowe, who is just – he can't do anything wrong in AAA. First game back with Tampa Bay, goes deep. Like, this is what the guy does, and then he goes back to the bench because they want to play Jesus Aguilar. They want to play G-Man Choi. They don't want to play Nate Lowe. I don't understand. I don't know if you understand it, but it's like I want to own him and play him, but I don't at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's super frustrating. He hit a home run. I can't remember if it was Monday or Sunday, but he hit a home run. It was Sunday. He hit a home run in his first game with the Rays after being called up, after rosters expanded. And then today, in a doubleheader, including one that had a right-handed pitcher, he sat both games of the doubleheader. So, you know, it's just kind of like, all right. He's shown great skills so far this year. He's got better than league average plate discipline. He's got better than league average contact. He's got better than league average hard hit rate. He's got a beautiful 31% ground ball rate. He's hitting the ball in the air a ton, 8.1% barrels per plate appearance, close to 115 mile per hour max exit velocity. Like, the dude is a stud, and I think he's going to be really, really good when he does get playing time. It just seems like the Rays are not committed to making that happen. G-Man Choi, I don't know what happened today, but he does have a little red suitcase next to him in my on NFBC, so he may be injured. If that's the case, maybe he gets a little run, but I would love to have him because I think if he does get a run of games here, the Rays, and we were going to talk about, like, who has a great schedule down the stretch, but pitching is just so horrible that, like, every team has a good stretch run. But Tampa Bay, they have one more game against Baltimore, then they've got four against Toronto, they've got three against Texas, three against the Angels, two against the Dodgers, four against the Red Sox, two against the Yankees, and then they close it out with Toronto again. So again, like, the AL East just has garbage pitching right now, the Yankees and Red Sox included. And so he could really go on a nice little run here to close out the season. I'm just not sure, again, whether the Rays are going to, you know, give him that time. But if I had to choose between Nate Lowe and Kyle Tucker, unless I needed stolen bases, I would lean Nate Lowe because I do think that we've seen that he can play at the major league level and play well. We haven't necessarily seen that from Tucker. And so I would lean low of those two. What about you?
Yeah, I'd 100% go low of those two because I think Low might at least get to play three or four times a week maybe, where Tucker might pinch hit three or four times a week right now. That's just what it feels like. It really feels like they don't want Tucker to play at all. He might get like one or two starts a week where Low might squeeze in, and especially if Choi is hurt for any period of time, that really opens the door for Nate Lowe. So I think that's something to definitely keep an eye on. We saw him hit lefties as well in his first go around up here. So they can't pull the BS that he can't hit lefties thing, because that's not true. He's just a great power hitter, and he needs to play in the games really, really badly. Let's go to the Yankees again. We talked about their crowded outfield, their crowded infield, their crowded team, and I'm pretty sure it's the same situation here. It's probably similar to Kyle Tucker's situation with Clint Frazier. We know the power's there. Another guy that the Yankees just can't quit, but they don't give him consistent playing time. He was great earlier this year, went back to the minors, where he hit 248 with 8 home runs and 20 doubles. So the power kind of disappeared in AAA, surprisingly. But there's still a lot to like there with Clint Frazier, but I don't think the playing time's there. What about you?
Yeah, I think with so many of these guys, right, you got Judge, you got Talkman, you got Gardner, who are all clearly in front of Frazier. You know, maybe he'll get a little bit of run to keep guys fresh down the stretch, but I don't think he's enough of an impact bat at this point in his career that if he's not playing on a pretty much everyday basis or 3 out of 4, that he's that valuable to fantasy owners. K percentage is pretty high at 27%. He's got some contact issues. The batted ball quality has been okay. The home runs have been decent, but you know, he's not a standout guy for me. The Yankees do have a nice schedule down the stretch, like every AL East team, but he's not somebody that I'm running out to get. I'm really prioritizing playing time right now. You just need to be, I think that's where you can really gain on folks, is for the folks who have checked out, who are now playing fantasy football. For the guys who aren't monitoring things as closely, things change really, really quickly. And so I think the edge that you can get on folks is by keeping your lineup active, keeping it live, keeping those games coming, because there's going to be a lot of guys who are forced to stick with guys who are playing once, twice, three times a week. And regardless of who is playing once, two or three times a week, like that's not going to be enough to keep up with a guy who's playing 6 or 7 games a week.
Yep, that's a big problem. Last main guy we'll talk about here real quick is Kevin Cron. He's back up with the D-backs. We know the powers are at 39 home runs in AAA this year and hit 329. Reno's a great place to hit, don't get me wrong, but those are still like redonkulous numbers. The previous year at 309 with 22 home runs in AAA. So he's done very, very well there. In a short time in the bigs, 5 home runs, only at 203, but it was limited, not everyday type stuff. The talent's there. I don't know if the playing time's there, but he is intriguing, as Arizona might have a little more flexibility fitting him in than some of these other teams. What's your thoughts on Kevin Cron?
Yeah, Cron is a guy. He's not getting playing time right now. He's not playing tonight. I don't think he played last night. You know, he's probably in that 1 to 2 times a week type schedule right now, but he's a guy that once the Diamondbacks are eliminated officially from the playoff race, you know, and they, to their credit, they've been playing hard. They've been playing decently. They are currently 4 games out, you know, so everybody points towards the Mets still being in it after, wow, what a destructive loss that was today. My God. Did you see that?
That was rough. Oh, yes.
That is just, I feel bad.
Up 10 to 4 and blowing that mess. Yeah.
I mean, I like the Mets. I have a lot of friends that are Mets fans. It's just brutal. Like they don't deserve that. But I mean, the Diamondbacks are more in the race than the Mets are, and they're tied with Milwaukee right now, and they're about to win their game against the Padres tonight. And so, you know, they're going to be 3.5 games out of contention, and they're going to be closer to the playoff race than a lot of teams that are quote unquote in the race. And so, it may not be till the very end when they fall out of that race. That's a lot of games to make up with this little bit of season left to play. But, you know, for the final week or two of the season, if Cron gets some run, here's a quick question for you. Among players who have at least 20 batted ball events, who is number one in barrels per plate appearance?
I'm going to guess Kevin Cron.
Man, you are good. How did you guess that? He is 13.8%.
I don't know, just a hunch.
Right above Nelly Cruz. And so,
see,
I knew
Nelly was a big one, but I had to guess.
Yeah, I mean, he's even higher than Aristides Aquino. He's higher than Gary Sanchez. He's higher than Joey Gallo. So the power is there. It's available. He needs to get a run of games. And he's not like he's going to strike out quite a bit, but he's not. I don't think he's an egregious strikeout guy. Like, back. I think he's actually been able to maintain decent strikeout rates in the minors. So I just think that he could be a league winner down the stretch if he does get playing time. So just monitor him, see, you know, check in with the beat writers, see what they're saying about who's going to get playing time, who's not. But he could be a really nice addition for the last couple weeks.
Yeah, I'm with you. The playing time's there. I'm a big fan. I've owned him earlier this year. I dropped him, obviously, because I didn't know what they do with him after that. But I owned him when he had some consistent playing time, and he's a very valuable asset on your fantasy team if he's playing out there. Let's talk about a couple player profiles, little deeper dives that Toby likes to really give us the data on here. We'll start with the pitcher, Sandy Alcantara of the Miami Marlins. You know, a guy that came over, I believe, from the Cardinals in the Ozuna deal. Good young arm, starting to really get it going, throwing five or more innings in every August start, six or more in four straight, six or more Ks in three of his last four, three earned runs or less in three of his last four. In the month of August, a 3.03 ERA, 4.93 xFIP. So there's signs of life, and he's really the home runs have gone down, less than almost a half a home run per nine in the month of August. So signs are pointing in the right directions with Alcantara. Lefties, I know that from the DFS viewpoint of things. But what are you seeing that gets your attention with Sandy Alcantara?
Yeah, the big thing with Alcantara, and this is just one little data point that I found interesting, because I picked him up in actually our Barf League, because I just kept on seeing him with some decent strikeout rates and pitching pretty well. And one thing I noticed is that he's pretty much swapped his four-seam fastball for his sinker. And normally you'd be like, oh, no, don't do that. Don't throw your sinker. But his sinker has a 12.3% swinging strike rate this year, I believe, if I was reading that correctly. And so, you know, 12.3% swinging strike rate on his sinker. And then his four-seam fastball has a, I think, 6.3%. I'm just going to double-check this. I'm getting it up right now. So his sinker has a 12% swinging strike rate on it on 576 pitches thrown versus his four-seam, which has a 6.3% swinging strike rate. And over the last few starts, he's totally swapped usage. He's using his sinker a ton. He's throwing it like 50% of the time, I want to say, in his last three starts, which is a huge change. Actually, let me just get the percentages here while I have it right here. So fastball is down at 16%. His four seam is down at 16% of his pitches versus 48% from his sinker. If you go back to the three starts leading up to July 31st, he was at 45%. Four seam and 10% sinker. So normally you want people to stay away from your sinker. I don't know what makes Sandy Alcantara's sinker so good, but it does have a 12% swinging strike rate, and he's throwing it a ton more and seems to be pitching really well with it. And so, you know, for that reason, I think he's very interesting down the stretch if he's available for you in deeper leagues. I know this week he has a really nice two start week against Pittsburgh, and then he's got another kind of softer matchup, maybe like the Padres or something like that. For the second, this is the second little piece. And so his sinker is generating a 65.1% ground ball rate, which is unbelievably nasty. That's really, really good. So essentially, like, his sinker is just a dominant pitch right now. And it's only been okay from a WRC plus perspective, 112. But a lot of those underlying metrics point to it being better. And so maybe he's figured out that that's his better fastball to go to. And he's throwing it more. And so that'll be an interesting development to kind of monitor and see how he does. Because a pitch that can generate that many ground balls and also swing and misses it could be a special pitch. And I hate to say that about a sinker. I'm sure it's just small sample size.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. The pedigree was there. The prospect pedigree was there. He just hasn't put it together yet. Maybe he's finally getting it going. Like, the Marlins are still a ways away, but there's some young talent there that it gets your attention at least. It's fun to watch from a fantasy perspective. Real life, not so much. Fantasy-wise, there's a few little nuggets here or there that are kind of interesting there for you. Let's go to a bat. The Arizona Diamondbacks, Josh Rojas. Super, super talented prospect guy. I believe another one of our boy Chamberlain's guys that he enjoyed. 2-for-4 on Tuesday night. Gives him like a 6 or 7 game hitting streak now. He's hit 2 home runs in his last 5 games. There's a lot to like here. He's hitting second on Tuesday night in the order. Looks like he's going to get everyday playing time for the D-backs. What's your interest in Josh Rojas?
Yeah, I mean, this, we should pretty much just have this podcast sponsored by Alex Chamberlain at this point. I mean, we're bringing up his guys so much. Rojas, I picked him up a few. He was dropped in a couple leagues. I think people were, you know, a little disappointed with the initial returns. He's only got 56 plate appearances, but since August 1st, he's got a 340 expected WOBA, solid play discipline, 27% O swing. Contact is okay, 84.5%, so right around league average for in zone, a little under at 73% for overall. But his hard hit rate is at 50%. Almost hit a jack today. He just hit it to the wrong part of the ballpark. He does have some speed to go along with that power and the possibility of a decent batting average. And so that could be really, really nice down the stretch for folks. I do think he's going to get everyday playing time. He is getting everyday playing time. He is not a bad guy to be looking for, especially in like 12 teamers. I think he'll be available a decent amount of places. I got him even in a 15 teamer. I think I picked him up in TGFBI, I want to say, this week. So I'm hoping he'll lead me to victory there. Just a guy that I think should be on folks' fantasy radars. He's going to get playing time. He's got some power. He's got some speed. I think he should be pretty interesting.
Yeah, no, and if he's getting everyday playing time in that D-backs offense, which it's not consistent, but it can explode. Nickel's off at times. And if he's in the middle there, you got Eduardo Escobar, who's got like over 30 home runs, over 110 RBIs. Ketel Marte, if Cron, Christian Walker's got, I think, 25-plus homers. There's a lot of offense there. And if he's in the middle of that, he's going to help you in some massive counting stats down the stretch. So that's a very, very good – even Wilmer Flores is heating up in the month of August. It's crazy. Crazy times in Arizona. They just have no pitching. So that's killing them right now. You mentioned Josh Rojas. I pulled up my TGFBI Fab results. He was picked up two periods ago. Not this one, not the one, the previous one. The week of 8/18, Mr. Jeff Erickson got him for $5 way back when. And he dropped Dansby Swanson along the way. So that was a fun one. But let's talk about some Fab from this week. Each week it's going to be kind of not the greatest, more kind of individual type deals. In my world, Dansby Swanson got picked back up this week, but like Sam Hilliard was one of the big ones. We talked about him last week when he kind of got the job with the D-backs with the injuries going on in that outfield. He's been very good. The power's there. He's not running yet, but he really hasn't been on. It's either like home runs or it's like what Adalberto Mondesi did earlier this year. He's hitting doubles, triples, home runs. He wasn't giving you the chance to steal bases. Hilliard's not really doing all that just yet. You never know. They could pull playing time at any given time, but for now, I see him playing pretty regularly, at least versus right-handed pitchers. Anytime you can get a Coors bat, that's always good. A few other ones that were kind of standouts, Trevor Richards, two-start week. He got picked up. Jake Bowers got picked up by Matt Thompson. Sean Manaea was a popular one. Everybody saw what he's doing in the minors, his last rehab start. Pitched well in five innings in the Bronx. So he got added. Ben Zobrist is back. He was leading off on Tuesday night. So if he's available, he could be a sneaky nice add. Jake Cave was added, Tony Gonsolin, Daniel Ponce de Leon. So just kind of a bunch of blah, but you never know because they'll be hit and miss in the month of September. Hilliard and Manaea are probably the big two in my league. What about you?
We had another, I think we had 20-plus bids.
You guys are busy. It's crazy.
Oh, man, people are moving. People are moving and shaking here. So the big move was for Jake Cave, who I think is a really astute pickup. That was Brant Chesser, who's also in our two early mock, a really, great player, smart dude. He has a lot more fab than everybody else, so he could bid a lot. He bid 27. And Cave, I mean, my only concern with Cave, I brought them down a little bit and I missed out on him in a couple places because of it. Because of the news that Byron Buxton was activated from the IL, I believe, at the end when rosters expanded. So it may just be that they can expand rosters and free up a space. But that gave me a little bit of pause. But he's playing against right-handed hitters. He's crushing the ball. He can hit the ball really, really hard. And if he elevates the ball, he can do a lot of damage. So great pickup there. He's already had a really nice week so far. After that, it was all pretty low bids. Seth Brown went for 7. I got Dylan Bundy for 4. Bundy play. He has the Rangers for one start this week, so I started him there. Please pray for me. And then next week, I think he has a really nice two-step. Oh man, don't tell me he got bumped from his two-step because of this whole double.
I think he had a two-step this week.
No, he's got Thursday this week. I thought he had a two-step next week. He might not have a two-step from next week, which would be annoying as hell. Because, it was going to be, it actually wasn't the greatest. It was the Dodgers and Detroit. But just a two-step with a decent pitcher who's, maybe it wasn't that he had the two-step. Maybe it's that his two-step that he should have coming up is going to be Toronto and Seattle. Or Detroit and Seattle in 2 weeks. And he's been pitching okay, and we talked about him last week. Like, I'm not a fan of Bundy by any means, but he's a league average pitcher right now, and that is something. You've got a pulse. Ronnie Rodriguez went. Framber Valdez went. Patrick Sandoval went. Really like Patrick Sandoval. Picked him up a couple weeks ago, but dropped him just because he doesn't seem to be able to get to that five innings to qualify for a win. Glasnow was picked up. That's an astute pickup by James Anderson. Sam Hilliard went for $3, backup of two. I got Drew Verhagen. He's got a two quote unquote start week. He's been piggybacking off of Daniel Norris. Norris has been pitching three innings per start, and then Verhagen's been taking over and going as far as he can, and he's been pitching really well. He struck out 6 today and 4 1/3, gave up 1 run, I think only 3 walks and hits. Really, really solid there. And I think it was against the Royals. And then on Sunday, he has the A's. So not the best matchup in the world, but it's at the Oakland Coliseum. So some hope there. Josh Rojas, I picked up for $3, a backup of 1. Michael Givens went for 2. Andres Munoz went for 2. Kike Hernandez went for 2. Fegley for 1. Victor Reyes, who I actually like. I think he's a good pickup in a lot of places. He's leading off for the Tigers, playing every day. He's a switch hitter. He's been hitting for a decent batting average, actually stealing some bases, has a solid sprint speed. I saw Fantasy Gospel is a Twitter account that I follow, and they mentioned him, and that kind of alerted me to them. So kudos to them. Nomar Mazara for 1, Dario Agrizal for 1, any two-starter here. Mike Ford for 1, Wendell Flores for 1, Howie Kendrick for 1, Danny Duffy for 1, Ross Stripling for 1. That could end up being nice. It looks like Urias is going to take that piece in the rotation, but Dustin May just hasn't been that good.
And he got Stripling hit in the head by a line drive.
Yep, exactly. So, he was supposed to pitch, I think, against the Giants this week, and I didn't see him on the schedule, so I dropped him. Justin Smoke for 1, I dropped him last week just because he's not playing that much. Jacob Wagispack, Jaime Barria, and Daniel Norris all went. So, this is where we are in the season, right?
It's crazy, like, most of those guys are all gone in my leagues. That's the thing. It's like, none of those guys are available when I go to pick that guys up.
I think that's one of the things about churning at this point in the season is a lot of times guys are maybe churning folks who are a little deeper into their roster, because you're playing matchups at this point in time and you're just trying to maximize the number of games that people play. It's super packed in ours. We've got five players in the top 32 in the TGFBI. We've got 5 guys within 15 points of the lead. So it's going to be a lot of fun here down the stretch, and people are going to continue to grind. It's been a lot of fun to be in. TGFBI is terrific. Thank you, Justin Mason, as usual. Just a lot of fun has been generated from this competition.
Yep, no doubt about it. So that'll wrap us up this week. Any closing thoughts? I think you've said enough. No, I was kidding.
Bubba, the truth comes out.
I was joking with you. Any final thoughts as we're 1 week into September?
No. The too early mock should be fun. My first 2 picks were Justin Verlander at 110, and then I took Fernando Tatis at 220, I think.
Nice.
How about you?
I had 113. I took Trey Turner, and
Trey Turner pick.
at 217 at Tecozy Ramirez.
I was hoping one of those two guys might fall back to me, recency bias, but it's a sharp league. So
on paper, that would like give me a good chunk of stolen bases right out the gate and other good categories that wouldn't kill my team. So I'd be actually very happy with that start.
Yeah.
But we'll see. It's September and we're drafting for next year. So
yeah, who knows? Totally. And teams that we don't actually have to keep.
Yeah. No, this will be my best team drafted. So don't worry about it. But September baseball in full swing. We'll be back with you guys early next week to keep breaking down. We'll do a lot more too early mocks. Hick, it might be done by next week, but I doubt it. But you never know. It moves pretty quick on day one. I was pretty impressed with the movement in that one. Mm-hmm. You said you have pick 10. There's a lot of good names in there, so we'll have a lot of fun. I think it was Justin. He doesn't pick all the people, but he does some of the draft orders on his own, and he put a good group of us all together. So.
Oh, absolutely! Yeah, it's a lot of fun guys in there.
Yeah, really looking forward to that. But as always, you can follow Toby on Twitter at BatFlipCrazy. I'm on Twitter at BDEntric, and we will be back with you guys next week. This was Bubba and the Batflip, episode 7. Catch you guys later.
Hey, Drew Scott here, and I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.